Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
These discussions with paramilitaries were at play with death.
Remarkable personal stories from around the world.
They don't speak with words, they speak with guns.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hi, I've come to pick up some glasses. Manuela Zaragoza, do you want to spell it?
Hello, I'm Manuela Zaragoza. This is Business Daily from the BBC. And in this edition, we're focusing our lens on the eyewear business. I've just bought two pairs of prescription glasses.
Those are my reading ones. Oh, yes. I can see. That's great.
But visiting my local opticians here in London was somewhat overwhelming. Did I want varifocals, bifocals, tinted, scratch-resistant or mirrored coatings? That's just the lenses. There was also the frames to consider. So much choice.
Oh, this is so nice. It's so nice.
Looking at the world through rose-coloured glasses.
Yet pretty much all the frames and lenses on show were manufactured by just two companies you've probably never heard of. And now those same two companies are merging to create a global eyewear behemoth.
They really will have a virtual monopoly at optical retailing.
So why have so many competition authorities around the world given this merger the green light?
Quite simply because the facts of the case did not lead us to need to intervene.
That's why I'm looking at the world. Rose-colored glasses, everything is rosy now.
Perfect.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. Bye. Bye, thank you.
My new glasses set me back about $200. Not cheap, and they weren't even branded. There's a reason the eyewear industry is worth some $115 billion globally today. Fat profit margins, and we'll come back to those in just a moment. First, though, how did eyewear go from being just a medical device to a fashion accessory? Well, in large part, it's down to this man.
I've always hated depending on others. I've always preferred calling the shots myself. Everything stemmed from my fear of being dependent on others.
That's Leonardo Del Vecchio. He's the octogenarian founder and chairman of the Italian company Luxottica, the world's biggest maker of eyeglass frames. He's an industry titan, revered and feared in equal measure. He's also Italy's richest man and one of the country's biggest taxpayers. No small achievement for someone who grew up in an orphanage, became an apprentice to a toolmaker in Milan before setting up his eyeglass frame company in 1961 in northern Italy. Luxottica's main manufacturing base is still there in those sunny foothills of the Italian Dolomites. But today the company makes frames for a huge range of luxury brands: Armani, Prada, Burberry, Ralph Lauren and more. When you buy a pair of Chanel glasses, they're not made by Chanel, but by Luxottica. Luxottica also owns Ray-Ban and Oakley, and it's heavily involved in the distribution and retailing of eyewear too. Its outlets or chains include Lens Crafters, Pearl Vision, Sunglass Hut, and many, many more. In fact, over the years, its appetite for buying up competitors has sometimes appeared somewhat insatiable. Here's Mr. Del Vecchio again.
I've always had big problems with distributors because they made payments and placed orders when they wanted to. I remember one year when one American importer came in November, as usual, to buy for the next sunglasses season, and he ordered fewer glasses than the year before. I lost sleep over that. I wondered, What would happen if other distributors started doing the same? I realized then that even distributors weren't good enough for me. The turning point came when I decided to buy up the distributors I liked most. The next turning point came when we went straight to the consumer by having our own retail outlets. We bought America's largest eyewear retail chain, and that gives us security.
Leonardo Del Vecchio recounting his story on the Luxottica website. Some would describe its expansion as aggressive, which is why Luxottica's decision to merge with the world's biggest manufacturer of lenses raised some eyebrows when it was announced last year. That lens maker is Essilor of France, and it controls some 40% of the world's prescription lens market. But where Luxottica is all about fashion and aesthetics, Essilor is, well, it has a different kind of reputation.
Quand les lunettes, comme mes lunettes.
The French tend to run optical businesses in a more philanthropic, committee-driven way. And they're out on a mission to improve the vision of the world.
That's Dean Butler, who founded LensCrafters in the 1980s, America's largest eyewear retail chain, the one Luxottica bought out. Mr. Del Vecchio wouldn't speak to us. He rarely gives interviews. But Dean Butler did do business with him.
You know, he's a fascinating guy. If you went and had a beer with him, you'd have a good time. But when it comes to business, he's utterly ruthless. With Leonardo Del Vecchio, it's my way or the highway.
Tell us about what happened with Oakley in the States, because that's pointed at by many as an example of how ruthless Luxottica has been.
The guys that ran Oakley were really, really good. They were the first people with these mirror-type lenses that are all different colors and things of that sort, and they had super high-quality products. Luxottica owned Sunglass Hut, which is, you know, thousands of sunglass stores. The largest selling brand in Sunglass Hut was Oakley. And Leonardo Del Vecchio thought, this other guy's making all the money at manufacturing, he's charging me too much. So they started, I'll call it a fight. And one day, Leonardo decided that he would send out a message to all of his retail stores worldwide and said, take every single Oakley product out of the store. And within the next couple of days, Oakley's stock price dropped by one-third.
So quite a blow.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, Leonardo came along and made Oakley's owners an offer they couldn't refuse.
Which was?
He bought the business.
I see what you mean by ruthless.
Leonardo, you got to hand it to him. He's done awfully well, and he does not act illegally or anything of that sort, but he's more ruthless than what I think is the way you ought to run a business.
What about Essilor? How is that going to work, that marriage between Luxottica and Essilor?
We're going to see some drama. Leonardo Del Vecchio, who is the king of Luxottica, he runs the thing with an iron fist, if you will. He likes calling it a merger. It is not a merger. Essilor has acquired Luxottica, but Leonardo is still acting as though he runs it.
So do you welcome this takeover or merger, whatever we want to call it?
I welcome it, but I don't welcome the control that they will have. There are some aspects of what Essilor does that worry me. Major retailers are induced to enter into long-term supply agreements, minimum of 3 years. That makes it exceedingly difficult for anyone else to enter the market. And they lock in even the good private practitioners. They have very, very good equipment that's used by optometrists. And they'll say, hey, I'll give you one of these edgers. It's $30,000 US if you sign a 3-year lens supply agreement and buy 95% of your lenses from me.
So what do you think the consequences will be?
I think the high margins that are in the industry are going to move more and more toward the large chains worldwide. 7% of the industry was what you would call a chain when I started the business in North America. Today it's over 50%. That number keeps getting bigger and bigger. And it's to the demise of the local optometrist.
I got my eyes on you. I got my eyes on you. got my eyes on you.
Dean Butler there, who founded the American large retail chain LensCrafters, speaking to us here on Business Daily from the BBC, where we're looking at how a mega merger in the eyewear industry might affect competition and the consumer. We'll come back again to Dean later. Given those sorts of misgivings, why are competition authorities approving the creation of this eyewear giant? So far, the merger has received the green light from authorities in the European Union and the United States. Only China's has said it's still mulling it over. That EU approval surprised Gordon Eilert too. He's an independent optometrist, one of the few left here in the UK.
Many of the high street opticians will probably use Essilor and Luxottica for 70 to 80% of their product that they sell here in the UK. Some people will try and avoid those companies, and so there are other suppliers out there, but they are in the minority.
Why would someone try and avoid them?
Because of the dominant way that they command your business. For instance, if you're buying a brand such as Ray-Ban, very few opticians would be allowed to sell Ray-Ban without taking on at least a couple of other brands from the Luxottica stable. And then sales targets and minimum order values are also put in place by those companies, which means that much of your stock on display is dominated by one supplier.
So it's quite aggressive.
It can be.
Do you get along well with them?
On the whole, yes. I think that Essilor in particular have done a lot of good for the profession. They've done a lot of education of professionals and driven the market in terms of the technology of lenses.
Do they wine and dine you ever? I know that they do that with some optometrists in France, for example.
So historically, Essilor have always been quite generous with their education. It's done subtly. It's usually product launches, or Essilor run a thing called Essilor University, where they're educating you about their product.
That's in Paris, isn't it?
It is. And the wining and dining that goes on there is to reward customers for being loyal to their businesses.
It's kind of a fine line, though, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
Are you surprised that the competition authorities in the European Union allowed this merger to take place?
I was a little bit surprised, but I understand that it may have been got around by the Luxottica business model includes retail outlets. And because if you then include all retail outlets in the European Union, they make up a very tiny percentage. If it was only related to optical outlets, then that would give them a much higher threshold.
Do you think that that's what they should have looked at then, the competition authorities?
I think they probably should have. If the merged company decides to become aggressive, they can take a pair of spectacles from the factory gate to the consumer in their own store, who then has their eyes tested by their own optician. The lenses are supplied by Essilor, so the company maintains all of the profit in that. And that will necessarily impede competition on the high street and make it more difficult for smaller businesses to survive.
Optometrist Gordon Eilert. We put some of his concerns to the European Commission's Competition Authority. Here's what their spokesman, Ricardo Cardoso, had to say.
Well, the Commission didn't intervene quite simply because the facts of the case did not lead us to need to intervene. So we carried out an in-depth investigation and we queried about 4,000 opticians throughout Europe.
Essilor has a lot of sort of multi-year tie-in contracts with many optometrists and retailers in return for access to their exclusive lens technologies. Did you ever consider the possibility that Essilor may use these relationships to force retailers into stocking Luxottica products now at the expense of rivals?
Well, yes, of course. These kind of concerns are exactly the type of issues we look at as part of our assessment. We found that the merged entity would still not be able to shut out competitors, as it would always run the risk that opticians would then switch to a different competing lens supplier, because lenses are far more commoditized than eyewear. So as such, people generally do not have a preference for a very specific brand of lenses in the same way that they could for eyewear.
Ricardo Cardoso of the European Commission. Whatever the outcome of this merger, there's no doubt the profit margins in the eyewear business are huge, and the merger of these two companies helps safeguard them. Here's Dean Butler again.
It's a very, very profitable business. It's why I got into the business. I quickly learned that if you were large enough to buy directly from manufacturers, that the cost of lenses is generally about 8% of what you charge for them at retail.
Wow.
And the cost
of a huge markup. We're what, 92% markup?
Well, it's even a bit worse today. The actual cost to manufacture the lens, in other words, the cost accounting that Essilor would do, is probably not much more than 20 U.S. cents a lens. Now, the local optician cannot buy them directly. He buys them from what's called the wholesale laboratory. Now, the wholesale laboratories are all owned by, guess who? Essilor. Essilor owns over 70% of the wholesale laboratory capacity in North America. If you're an optician, you're probably paying $8 a lens after it's been processed.
So when I buy a pair of glasses, what am I actually paying for? If I'm paying over $100 for a pair of reading glasses, what am I actually paying for?
You're paying for the optician's work. A traditional private practice optician is only selling 4 to 6 pair of glasses a day. And they don't make a lot of money. See, you really can't say these guys are getting rich off of the markup in eyeglasses. They're not. They could theoretically be doing way more business, but they've been happy doing 4 to 6 a day because they weren't commercial. It took people like me to commercialize what goes on in optics.
From a consumer's point of view, is it all a bit of a con?
My point of view is that consumers are paying a lot more than they should have to pay for eyewear. I'm 73 years old now. If I was back at 30 years old, I would start glasses in about an hour all over again and bring value back to the consumer.
Do it online then.
You can't sell good quality glasses online. People want to try the frames on. And one of the dynamics of optical retailing, it's really kind of funny to watch. If you're ever in an optical store, observe this. People don't buy glasses by themselves. They have a buying committee.
They need advice.
Yeah, that's right.
But there are these apps that you can use now. They take a photo of your face and then superimpose various frames on your face so you can see what it looks like. You could easily sort of get an internet site that does it for you online.
That's true, but there's one shortcoming to it. It doesn't tell you how well it fits.
You can't feel it.
You can't feel it on your nose. Mm. And you don't know if the bottom of the frame is going to touch your cheeks. I don't think online purchase of eyeglasses is ever going to be much more than about 10% of the industry. Right now, it's less than 5%.
Dean Butler, all of which bodes well for the merger of Luxottica and Essilor, and its plan to have a finger in the pot of pretty much every aspect of the eyewear business, from the eye test to the frame to the lens. Chances are, if you wear glasses or need to at some point in the future, somewhere along the way, this combined company will have played a role. And that's certainly what Leonardo del Vecchio wants.
My only regret is when I see someone walking down the street not wearing one of my frames. Because I want everyone to be wearing my glasses.
It's all clear now. That's it from me, Manuela Saragossa, and today's producer, Lawrence Knight. Business Daily is back again tomorrow.
Yes, everything is rosy now.
I knew right at that moment that my whole life was gone. I'm going to jail for a very, very long time. There was no doubt about it.
Lives Less Ordinary is the podcast with astonishing personal stories from across the globe.
And honestly, even at that point of reporting to a journalist, I don't think I really knew that that was in itself an act of whistleblowing.
Expect the unexpected.
The only future is death here. So if we live, we might have a chance. We will die anyway, but we will die trying.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.